Fun Ideas Productions presents the Fun Ideas Podcast.
I'm having so much more fun now.
Hi, this is Mark Arnold, and welcome to Fun Ideas Podcast number 235. The Fun Ideas Podcast is brought to you in part by Freaky Magazine. I contribute material to every issue, so give it a try.
Hey kids, have you read Freaky? The magazine of weird humor for freaks like you. Freaky Magazine is a way-out collection of weirdo comics, kooky gags, photo funnies, social satire, and surreal collage. 52 pages of insanity in the tradition of magazines of yore like Cracked, Plop, and Zap. Special offer for Fun Ideas listeners, get a free sample copy in the mail, made of smelly newsprint and smudgy ink the old-fashioned way. Just message your mailing address to theslowpoisoner@gmail.com. That's theslowpoisoner@gmail.com while supplies last.
You remember them from your childhood. Casper the Friendly Ghost, Richie Rich, Hot Stuff, Baby Huey, Sad Sack and Little Audrey. You read them in comic books and saw them on television and in the movies. Now you can read about how they and other Harvey comic characters were created in two great books from Mark Arnold and Fun Ideas Productions, The Best of Harveyville Fun Times and The Harvey Comic Companion. Both are available from Amazon. The Companion is also available from Bear Manor Media. They are available in hardcover, paperback, and ebook versions. Order your copies today.
Friends, have you tried Lee's Comics? Lee's Comics is better than the leading comic book store. Wait a minute. Lee's Comics is the leading comic book store. Based on arbitrary standards set by Lee Hester himself.
Lee's Comics was named as one of the 21 best online dealers by PopOptique.com. To shop the Lee's Comics eBay store, go to eBay and search for Lee's Comics, Inc. That's LEESCOMICSINC, period. Don't forget the period. Mention the Fun Ideas Podcast when you order, and you'll receive a free bonus gift. I plan to go on Charles F. Rosenay's Magical History Tour in 2024. And here is Charles to talk about it.
Hey, this is Charles Rosenay, sometime guest here on the Fun Ideas Podcast. Have you ever thought of taking a Beatles tour to Liverpool? Well, I host and organize the Magical History Tour every summer, www.liverpooltours.com. But I'm here to tell you about two other things. My books! Yes, Mark isn't the only author. I've recently published the book of Top 10 Beatles Lists, where 64 celebrities gave their top 10 favorite Beatles-themed lists with reasons why, and illustrations and photos and all kind of fun stuff. Please check it out, www.bookoftop10beatleslists.com. It's the follow-up to www.bookoftop10horrorlists.com, where 100 celebrities gave their favorite horror lists. Enjoy the upcoming show, and thank you for listening to my ad.
In Fun Ideas Productions news, progress is being made on publishing my upcoming Turtles and Mad books. Hopefully they will be out by the end of 2023 or the beginning of 2024. My latest books that are published include my books on Pac-Man, the stars of Walt Disney Productions, the revised second edition of my Monkeys book with Michael A. Ventrella called Long Title, and the TTV scrapbook. You can buy them all on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or directly from Bear Manor Media. If you'd like a signed book, contact me at funideas.mark@gmail.com or purchase your book through my listings on eBay. I'm still working on my TV cartoons that Time Forgot book, as well as articles about the Harvey implosion and Aunt Archie's Mr. Weatherby. On today's show, we have an actress known for such films and TV shows as The Cannonball Run, Silent Night, Deadly Night, The Misadventures of Sheriff Lobo, and Days of Our Lives. She will be at the upcoming Salem, Massachusetts Paranormal and Horror Paracon on November 11th and 12th. Here she is, Tara Buchman.
Should I say got it? Got it.
Hi, this is Mark Arnold at Fun Ideas Podcast, and today we have another episode of the Fun Ideas Podcast. How about that? We have a special guest, courtesy of my friend Charles F. Rosenay, who brings me great guests, either musical guests or actress guests in this case. And today we have the actress who is going to make an appearance at the Salem, Massachusetts Paranormal and Horror Paracon on November 11th and 12th. Her name is Tara Buchman.
Tara
Buchman. I knew I'd say it wrong.
Yeah.
So, how are you today?
You know, it's that line, and I can't help it. I just have to preface it. You're always supposed to be politically correct and say, I'm fine. I'm well. But you know what? I just say, I'm breathing. You know, so hey. I'm breathing.
Very good. Now, Charles got us together to do this show. And of course, growing up, I was a TV holic, and I still am. And it seemed like you were always on my screen, be it Kojak or Sheriff Lobo or
all those intelligent
Buck Rogers or what else did you do? Hardy Boys. You were on every show. What was it like back then to do all this stuff all at once?
Well, you know, I'll tell you how I got into it, but
okay.
Realize the way I think is that was the dumbest era, the 80s. And it, like BJ and the Bear, Sheriff Lobo, I did the series, Buck Rogers. It was so stupid. But I went out there and got right in immediately. But that's what there was. And so it really wasn't me. I didn't go out there to do that kind of stuff. I didn't go out there to turn blonde. I didn't go out there to, you know, do Cannonball Run silliness. But hey, I was working. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't and I was under contract to Universal, which is a whole I drove out with $800, my orange Camaro, and no place to live because I wanted this so bad. No place to live. Now there was a movie called Roller Coaster. Gosh, the oldies, Harry Gardino and Susan Strasberg, that came into town, and I got a bit part. I didn't get a bit. I actually had a line, whoopee, which made me get my SAG card. And so I had nowhere to live. But when I went out, like I said, nowhere to live, I did talk to the director, and he, in those days, the big empire had these big publicity agents, you know, the Black Tower and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they did People Magazine. They did a promotion of, oh, this girl was found, you know, like the Schwab story or something like that. You know, found in Virginia and she's an actress. But the contract system noticed me and brought me on immediately. The contract system for, I think most people, well, don't know it because in the old days, well, I'm old, but older than that, is you were under contract. And then they would loan you out to different studios, but you did their work. Mm-hmm. So it was the same theory, mm-hmm. you know, that we, that's why we did all the stuff that was on at Universal. And they paid you each week, whether you worked or not.
Oh, okay. So it really was like the movie studios.
Yes. And Jamie Lee Curtis, Kim Cattrall, I'm trying to think, Sharon Gless, Rick Springfield, a number of people, you know, were under contract there doing this stuff. So basically, I want to say, I don't think I got lucky. Other people might say that. I think it was, I was driven. I was gut-wrenched, wanted to act and get my emotions out, which of course you can't do on Buck Rogers and stuff like that. But I just say that was a beeline. Mm-hmm. And so I always say, so I wasn't like a struggling actor in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I just say, hey, I don't care what it is you want to do, just beeline towards it. You know, you might have to wait or something like that. So I don't know what the word luck is on that stuff. You know, you just, this was a passion forever. Mm-hmm. So Universal was great. I mean, I was 20, you know.
Yeah. Well, if it wasn't luck, it certainly was good timing and synchronicity. I'll say that, and coincidences.
Yeah, it was. Even though the parts were just, you know, they were what they were for the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Now, prior to Roller Coaster, we'll just, we'll talk about that a little bit. Did you do any formal acting training, or did you have aspirations to be an actress, or no, yes or no, or what were you, what were your ambitions in life, I guess?
Right. Well, drama in school, I really, so I wanted this just since a kid, you know, and, the one thing I've said before is it hurts so bad not to be able to emote, I guess, or fill your stuff up, you know, go inside yourself to be a part of a character. And the one thing that I have a way of thinking to explain it is the movie, A Star is Born. Mm-hmm. And the one I watched was with Chris, I got a mint in my mouth.
That's okay.
Chris Offerson and Barbara Streisand. And I remember watching it, I guess it was on TV or something. I just belted on the ground sobbing because some scenes just, and I went, it hurt so bad, Mark. I needed to do that so bad. Because I think that, you know, you people, when they say fans, you've touched their lives somehow, or you feel a scene. So it hurt so bad that once the movie came here, I figured, oh, it's either California, is it California or New York? And I wasn't crazy about stage, so I went there. No, this was a painful thing that I needed to do. And I was a Navy brat. So I'm the oldest of five, smashed in between 7.5 years, but I never went to really more than two years each school. And then we moved, then we landed in Virginia. I got to go to 4 years of the same high school. So I never knew anybody for very long. And then you have to make friends. So I think that might have given taught me a lot about, you're going to meet different characters and, you know, become friends, or either, you know, study in a way, study a character. I think that was a lot to do with how I viewed being able to do acting in different characters.
Right. Well, I would say also you were able to move, it seemingly, to California with ease just because you had moved so many times previously, correct?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, because I that's a good point. I never thought about that.
Because I know when I was a teenager, you know, it's like, you know, I grew up in Northern California. I lived in Southern California briefly when I was
lucky. But
then we moved back to Northern California, and for some reason, just to move south in the same state just kind of freaked me out. Even though, you know, because I was like, you know, I was not a person who liked to move. I'm still not that way. I don't do tons of traveling and everything.
Oh, I'm like a gypsy. Yeah. Move only because I don't want to be here. But yeah, But did you grow up there for, like, did you go to the same elementary school with people? And
once from fourth grade to senior year in high school, yeah.
Oh, so okay.
For eight years straight, yeah. Yeah.
People you knew. Had to leave them. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, even it says in your bio, you weren't even born in Virginia. You're born in Pensacola, Florida. Is that correct? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like,
maybe. Then, yeah.
So how many times did you move, you know, during your formative years?
You know, it's not so much how many times you move like out of state,
yeah.
But, here in Virginia, that's a Navy, big Navy town. And so my dad got based here after Pensacola, and after he opened the, nobody knows about this, the first Navy base in Lemoore, California.
Yeah.
So we moved there. And so even when you're there, I went to three different schools, elementary, because in the state, you know, they're building more schools. So if you're leaving that school, there's a whole new bunch of friends elsewhere.
Right.
Same thing happened here. It's like, really? You know, and I have one childhood friend that in the fifth and sixth grade, I think, maybe I was seventh. So I have one friend from the days of that period. I know people from 9, 10, 11, 12.
That you still are in contact with, is that what you're saying?
The younger one, I don't really care much. Yeah, that's where we landed. Here now taking care of mom. I don't have any idea where I'm going to move.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where I'll be. I think, you know, Seattle. I like the West.
Yeah.
It's a little different in the Southeast.
Yes. I mean, I'm in Oregon now, so I'm in Springfield. It's
nice. Yeah.
And yeah, Washington's just a couple hours away. And, you know, of course I go down to California, and I did move temporarily like 5 months to Florida, and I was like, oh, you know, so, but
now was it the humidity? 'Cause I can't deal with that.
I didn't like that, but I didn't like, there's pretty much everything I didn't like about it. I moved to Orlando thinking, oh, Orlando, it's a piece of LA in Florida. Wrong. But I didn't know. This is in the 90s, and this is before the internet and all that stuff. So it's like, you know, I didn't know.
But that was when you did, well, the 70s for me, it was all about the summer. That's what, when you got out of college or school, it was going to Florida.
Yeah.
I don't remember that, but that's what, go to Florida, you know, for your spring break.
Yeah,
which
I didn't go for that reason. I was long out of college by that point, but yeah, I was aware of it because it happened when I was there. But
yeah,
anyway, so let's see, let's go to Roller Coaster. So I'm reading this from your Wikipedia, the bastion of accuracy that Wikipedia always is. I always tell people.
I know you had to study me, didn't you?
Yes, I did. So it says you were a waitress in a hotel when you were discovered by James Goldstone, who is the producer on this roller coaster thing.
Yeah.
I know, I'm making fun of but actually I know I've seen it because I love those disaster films. So anyway.
He was the director. Yeah.
Okay. And what circumstances was that? It was just there, or was he scouting, or was he, you know?
Yeah, they were on location scouting, and there was a famous roller coaster here, and it was an old crickety wood thing, and I can't remember if it was still active, but they were able to, I don't think they broke it down, but they were able to use that. There was another movie that came along, and I think they blew it up, but I don't know if this was a movie or not.
Yeah.
And they came into town. I was working at a high end place for this town, waitress, but still in my gut, I was just figuring out like New York or LA, right?
Yeah.
So then I waited on him. I don't know I think it was James Goldstone. Had to say, yes, this is the location manager and I'm the director, you know, like that mattered. But I fell to my knees and I went, I've always wanted to act. And I can't even believe I would do that. but I was so serious, and he was so nice. You look like Santa Claus to me, and he was just so nice. And we met, like, you know, later for coffee, and he said, "I'm going to have my casting director call you." And so they came back, I guess, a few months later, and the casting director had called and put me in that part where I'm an attendant on the roller coaster.
Right.
But then they gave me some lines, you know, and just a wonderful, wonderful. I mean, the man was just so nice. You know, when they see something in you and then, you know, you want to be an actor and they can help a little bit.
Yeah,
that's really kind.
Well, I can't believe that worked, you know, but maybe you stood out by doing that.
Well, what happened, it was a Universal film. So, you know, the dailies go to Universal, and Universal said, "Who's that?" You know, so I guess I was already, what do you call it? They'd already noticed me. Let's put it that way. But I didn't know that when I drove out with my $800. Orange Camaro.
Were you sending publicity headshots and things like that out, or anything like that?
No,
that
I point? Didn't have. I didn't know what they were. There was a person here went to did a travelogue film before. This is so weird. I think I was 18, and I was at a gas station filling up, and this guy, I don't remember his name. He comes to me and he says, "Have you ever acted before?" And I'm going, "No." And he was doing a travelogue film in Portugal in 1975 or six, when things had blown up. And I was there a month, but it was like that kind of. I don't know that that happens so much today, you know, but it was just odd. You know, somebody saw you and I did that. So I think James Goldstone was just one of those good people. Who knows what would have happened to me afterwards. But like I said, the footage went there, and of course nobody called me. I just drove out. So. and they publicized it as sort of like that Cinderella story, you know, James Goldstone found her, you know, so that was pretty good angle. And thank you very much.
Now on that film, you know, I know how films are done. You never meet all the stars or anything. You know, you have your isolated scene, but did you meet anyone that was of renown on that film, like Henry Fonda or anybody, or
Harry Gardino?
Okay.
Harry Gardino was the nicest person and took the time to chat with a, you know, little old me, you know. I didn't talk to Susan Strasberg or even, what was the name, Timothy Bottoms?
Yeah, he was in it.
Who played the wacko, or the one they were chasing after, who blew up the... Yeah, he was kind of intense, you know, and on his own. Yeah. So, no, I can't give you any scoop there. Yeah. Except I did meet the stunt people. You know, and so when I did get out to L.A., I think I had somebody's card. And I mean, I love stunts. I love stuntmen, the crew, better than I do like the cast. You know, I'll hang with that.
Cool. And then there was a young Helen Hunt in that movie. But I mean, did you encounter her at all? Or
how old was she?
Well, it was after she was in Swiss Family Robinson in like 75. So that was like, she was like 9 or 10 then, I think.
Okay.
So she probably was a young teen, maybe mid teen by the time.
See, I'm still wondering if I actually worked with her on a Quincy, because
you might have. I'd have to look it up. Yeah.
It's another story there.
Yeah.
With a director that had brought me in because they saw me in something else. And this girl was so good. I was so bad in that. And because she intimidated me. She was so good.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't,
well, I'm sure she was on a Universal contract just like you, you know, and probably was making all the rounds as well before she got mad about you and all that other stuff later on, you know.
I don't think so.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. because anyway, I'm just kind of curious. What? I'm sorry?
Kim Cattrall under contract, but she was the same as what we read about today. That's all it's like.
No. And then you were doing all these different shows, but you got a couple TV movies that were kind of interesting. And I think I saw these too. You know, it's like I used to watch everything. So Death Car on the Freeway.
Yeah.
Did you have any memories or work with anybody there that stood out or, you know?
Yeah, see, that was a Hal Needham, his first movie of the week, because he'd done Smoking the Bandit, Hooper and Burke, you know.
You were in Hooper and Cannonball Run,
Yes, and so you always see the same actors coming together on those films because it's like a family, you know. The Coen brothers, all kinds of, you know, directors bring in the actors they've always worked with, of course. And so then we did that Death Car on the Freeway, and I knew all the stunt people. Abe Vigoda, I worked with, but I was so bad. So, see, some of these scenes are awful. It's awful acting. And when I drove the movie of the week was about this killer van. I can't believe what I'm talking about. Black killer van who chased people and then I guess crashed into them or killed them or something. I don't remember the story.
I don't remember. It's been, I think I saw it when it aired. So if you don't remember, I don't remember. That was your last episode.
Well, I think I actually did watch that one, but that was the only time. But I was in a stick shift car, and I didn't know how to drive stick shift, but the van was chasing me. But you're on this freeway, and it was pretty empty. They were building 118, you know, that route, 118 freeway, when it wasn't active. They were still working on it, and we had all the best stunt people around me and in front of me driving their cars and all that, because we had to drive at a high speed and they knew exactly what they were doing. I was supposed to stop, sorry my eye, but I didn't. So if you see, it's interesting, if you see in the film movie of the week, I actually put on the brakes and do a 180, like, and so the stuntman came up, oh my God, that was so good, and everything. I guess maybe they thought I meant to do it, but Hal Needham, we'd work together on the Hooper, and he had me jump out of a truck into another. You know, he was just more fun doing that way. So, I'm at the convention. I went to my first autograph signing. George Hamilton was there recently. A fan brought up a picture of me and George Hamilton on Death Car on a Freeway, had pasted it, and I went, George Hamilton was in that?
Yeah, he's in it.
I don't remember that.
I mean, there's a lot of weird people. Dinah Shore's in it. Peter Graves is in it. Yeah.
I don't know.
Harriet Nelson of Ozzie and Harriet. Shelley Hack.
Oh, yeah.
And Frank Gorsh and the Riddler. It's a very odd casting, but I mean, I'm sure I watched it. I hate to say it, I didn't watch it for you, but you know, you were attractive. So anytime I saw you on things, I go, hey, that's, you know, so, but you know, I probably watched it because of Gorsh and because he was the Riddler, you know, there's some reason like that.
Oh, you see, know. I don't know any of that, you know, I mean, I don't even know that I probably watched it, but you know, I don't.
Well, you're not required to. I'm the kid teenager that's like watching all this stuff, and it's like, he's eating it all up. But you know, it's like, you know.
Yeah, people have told me that, and that's why it's so interesting when people come up to you and they remember a few lines of some episode, you know.
Yeah.
But my day, I was watching David Cassidy and the Partridge Family and Bobby Sherman, Here Come the Brides.
There you go. then another one you did that same year. And in this one, I know I've seen more than once because I think they repeated it. The Man in the Santa Claus Suit with Fred Astaire. And how was that experience for you?
Oh, well, again, that goes back to another director that had brought me in to do two Quincy's, because we worked together well, but he, when I did a Quincy, and then when I was very young at Universal, they put me on a part in the beginning of the show where I played a, obviously a young girl or 2021, and I'd gone into the clinic and I had had an botched abortion. And so I'm in there screaming and I die. Okay. And that director was Corey Allen. I don't remember the show. I don't know if I ever watched it, but that's what I guess the investigation was that Jack Klugman did. But Corey saw something in me and then brought me back for the other Quincy. And, you know, you do that if you find good people. And yet it was such a bit part, but he saw something, you know, that he could work with or that was great. So we made good friends, remained. So then I did the Quincy. And then when the man in the Santa Claus suit came along, he was, he wanted me.
Oh.
And, it was a beautiful, beautiful Christmas show. Again, I didn't act very well. And there were, you know this, but there were three. Fred Astaire is the whole center of, I was around him, but I didn't work with him. Haven't seen
him.
He's Santa Claus. There were three trilogies. Nanette Frabe and Nanette Fabre and Harold Gould had a story. Gary Berghoff and I had a story. And then Bert Convy had a story. And Santa Claus made miracles happen. So that was sweet and lovely. And it wasn't a stupid show.
Yeah. I remember liking that one. I mean, the only reason I've been to those other ones, like Death Car on the Freeway, is just because it's some things you've done, you know, and not your fault. It's just they're so campy. They're fun, you know. I mean, the,
Yeah, and I do hear that lately. Only because I'm out. I'm talking for the first time about my career, and people actually know it. And since '95, I stopped working. Did I miss it? Absolutely. But when I hear this stuff, it's really, you remember that. Yeah. Because I guess it's a younger generation, and also they have reruns now and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, everything's on DVD. I mean, it's like you're mentioning Quincy, that's on DVD. And let's see, Heart to Heart is, I'm looking at your list, Barnaby Jones is, Buck Rogers is, you know, I'm not sure about the man in the Santa Claus suit, because, I mean, they just used to replay it, so that's where I see it. I don't know if it's on DVD.
Yeah, they played it every Christmas for a number of years.
You know. So.
And I think a friend of a looked it up. I think you could get it on DVD, but it's, you know, grainy or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a nice one that I could say I had felt I was serving, doing myself some respect out of all the other stuff.
I think it was Steve Martin. I think the reason why he did, it's in a book that he just put out about his movies. He said, I did like 50 films so I could have 5 good ones, you know, something to that effect, you know, and it's like, yeah, that's about right. You know, it's like you have to go through, you know, some not so good projects just to kind of get to the good ones, you know, and it's like, okay.
Well, but again, it was that era. If you do look at the 80s and then when the 90s, let's see. I remember when all those ensembles started.
Yeah.
With a lot of, you know, stars in it or a lot of people, you didn't have to hold the show and be stupid, you know, like, so you worked together and you told real stories, you know, so it, they had just started all that stuff when
And I like that, you know, I to this day, I mean, I was a Love Boat junkie and things like that, because, you know, I like to see all the stars. You'd see the current hot stars and then you'd see the old aging actors that you hadn't seen in 30, 40 years ago. And when I used to watch, I didn't know who they were. Now I'm like, oh, you know, this actress is on here. This actor is on here. You know, it's like, you know.
And I wonder how many of us truly from that era doing those kind of things still worked afterwards for a long time, you know?
Yeah.
Because
I don't know. But, yeah, you know, they had a lot of shows like that that they don't tend to have now. I mean, after Love Boat went off the air, then it was like Murder, She Wrote seemed to have all the aging actors and everything like that. And then now there's no, you know, outlet for that, you know. And so, oh, well, things change.
What I'm doing? I'm shaking my head a lot, aren't I?
That's okay.
Yeah.
I want you to agree with me. Not just you don't have to agree with me.
No, but if I understand.
Now the next show that I'm going to mention is probably where I first learned your name, because I know I probably honestly first saw you on Buck Rogers. That seems to be where the first time I saw you, you know, just because I was a Buck Rogers junkie and watched all those episodes. So, and I go, oh, there's another attractive actress they hired for this show. Yeah, because they did that on that
put
show.
Her in.
It's like, wow, the 25th century. I want to move there. Yeah, they have all the audience.
I'm a pretty person here. Yeah.
But the shows, The Misadventures of Sheriff Lobo, that I'm alluding to, I didn't really watch that show all that much. And obviously, because it only lasted two seasons, if I watched it more, it would have been on longer. But you weren't even on the first season. So, and then they switched it to Lobo, and then they changed most of the cast. So, what was the situation there that they revamped it? And why did they want to keep this thing going? For Claude Aiken's sake, or what was the deal?
Well, it did get kind of good ratings. Fred Silverman was at NBC then, and he wanted to try something else. And it would have gone on more, but the contract system died at that point. There were no even the directors and writers were under contract. Well, so the whole system went down, even though when it went down, that's when I got Sheriff Lobo. So I wasn't under contract then. It was really silly. I didn't watch the first season either. But they wanted to give it a little more class flair, so they moved to Atlanta. And so there you've got the hillbilly cops with the more intelligent cops, but there's nothing intelligent. Brandon Peaches and Nell Carter. You know, but they wanted to move in that direction. Now, Claude was not happy at all. I don't think he was happy with anybody because, you know, he's an old time actor. He was around. We were all like, who are you?
Right.
You know? Yeah. But I had a blast, kind of. Well, no, that's just not true. That is just not true.
Oh, come on. Make it up. It doesn't matter.
Because, you know, you wait around on the set. We weren't in the main, but we'd come in and say our lines, and they were just dumb. And I actually quit on the ninth episode just because, well, not knowing, because I just had kept working all the time, not knowing and having the experience of, oh, no, you don't quit. I mean, you've got to keep working. You got to keep making the money. You got to keep being on screen. I didn't know. It's just, it wasn't a role again that I wanted to play, but they said, oh no, you have to. So we finished that. And there was a writer, Frank Lupo, that if we did the third season, he was going to write me in a bigger, much bigger part because they saw things in me that I could do. So, but that didn't work.
Oh, well, it was not meant to be, but I think then did you do Days of Our Lives next, or did you do Cannonball Run next? What was kind of the chronology there?
I think it was Cannonball Run.
Okay. So how did you get involved with that? Was that because of the connections with, who was it you said?
Hal Needham.
Which one?
Hal Needham.
Yeah, because of Burt. And Burt Reynolds and all that stuff. Okay. Now, were you friends with Bert, or did you know him? I mean, or were you just kind of casual acquaintances?
Say that I did date. Sounds like young actress dating a director to get work. Yes, I did date 28-year-old Hal, older than me, but he was so fun. And we lived, or I didn't live with him, but Hal lived in Bert's guest house, which is like a, you know, big house.
Right.
And we ran together a bit. It was great. But when I was doing Cannonball, we weren't together. Mm-hmm. But he brought me in.
Yeah. Probably have the connection. So, yeah, I get it. You know, now, what was it like? I met Adrienne Barbeau before at another convention on the West Coast, and she signed your book and everything, and she was a pleasure to meet and everything like that. How did you get along with her?
We didn't we didn't sit around and talk. You know, we're all stuffed together. I knew Mel Tillis from before.
Yeah.
I knew Alfie Wise from before. Adrienne and I just didn't, you know, like Jamie Farr, when we were in Vegas, we went to some shows.
Yeah.
But Adrienne, we just kind of didn't. I mean, there was also something going on the set.
Ooh, okay. Well. You can choose to disclose that or not. You don't have to. I don't force anybody.
Well, you know, I Two Pad Podcast, you know, and you're my third person, so I'm more comfortable.
No, that's okay.
Well, and I think Adrienne actually told this person, or it's known. I feel bad saying this, but she was having an affair with Bert on the set. Ooh. Okay, so I guess she was busy and we couldn't play.
Aww.
But that, because I always wondered, like, how come I didn't do Cannonball 2?
Yeah.
Back then? Even though I wasn't affected by it, but then there was a guy writing a book called The Black Tower. And he was like, you're telling me so much stuff I didn't know, you know? And he told me that. Mm. And that's why she didn't want to do it. But also that, well, probably another reason, but what we did, we got together, the Lamborghini door came up, it goes down, we get out, and then we go back in, or we meet the cops, the Lamborghini door goes up. So that's really what it was. Mm-hmm. But well, I'm going to brag a minute and say that the opening shot is of the Lamborghini. I love the opening shot out of everything. The Lamborghini with the police chasing them. And then I get out of the Lamborghini and spray this 55 mile per hour speed limit sign and get back in. But Adrienne never rode in the Lamborghini. I got to ride in that Lamborghini.
Huh.
You know, and with the stuntman just shooting down there, you know. So otherwise, it was just legs coming out of the car and her boobs. So, you know.
Wow. Yeah, it is kind of interesting. I was going to ask you about that, but you don't really know that, you know, in Cannonball Run 2, they kept your characters and Adrienne's character, but you're replaced. Your character is replaced by Susan Anton, of all people. Who,
I know.
Nothing alike. And she's probably, I don't know how tall you are, but she's probably like a foot taller than you.
Yeah. Yeah. Originally, Pamela Sue Anderson.
Yeah.
She's gorgeous. You know who she is?
Yeah.
The blonde back then. Somebody, I remember it was.
Or wait, are you talking about Melissa Sue Anderson from?
No, Melissa, married.
Or Pamela Sue Martin.
Huge boobs, beautiful.
Oh boy.
And she married.
Just Pamela Anderson. There's no Sue. That's what it is. Okay.
Pamela Anderson.
Baywatch. Okay. Yeah. Her. Okay.
Well, originally I saw who somebody wrote who should be cast in that. And Pamela in my place, which she would have been good, I think. Well, no.
Well.
She would have been way playing it too sexy. I didn't play it sexy. And I can't remember the Adrienne Barbeau, but yeah, people say they didn't enjoy the second one as much as the first one. Yeah. I don't know. How about
the only thing that's good about the second one is, you know, just who's in the cameos, you know, like Sinatra and stuff like that. But you know, it's just, but there's odd cameos in the first one too. But it's all just kind of fluffy fun, you know. It's like
it was fun. The whole
I know
set was
Burt Reynolds later kind of regretted some of the movies he made in his career and figured he should have tried harder, but he did some decent films too. I mean, you know, it wasn't all just fluffy stuff. So
well, he started out way back, but I mean, he did many more, but Deliverance.
Yeah,
you know?
That was the first one I was going to say, you know, and even comedies that, are like considered classics now, like The Longest Yard or something like that, you know, and he did Starting Over and stuff like that. He did probably one of his best acting jobs. So, you know, he had a varied career. You know, I know actors probably are typically down on their own performances all the time and everything, but hey.
Well, you know, you realize that people need to work.
Yeah.
I made a ton of money at 20, 21 mm-hmm. for those episodes.
Right.
It doesn't last unless you're really going to keep moving up. So you do roles because you need to do roles, even the biggest people. I mean, what was the Murder, She Wrote? She probably needed money. You know,
yeah.
And the show. So we do things we don't want to do.
I get it, you know, and it's not unless you're like the level of, say, like Jack Nicholson or something. That's the one that came to mind where he just kind of says, all right, I'm done. You know, I'm not going to do this anymore. Or Gene Hackman, you know, he just said, I'm done. I'm not going to do this anymore, you know, and they're still around, but they don't need to do it. They've done so many things, you know, it's like, you know, but yeah. I get it, you know.
But the, you know, that was a huge cast. So 17 motorhomes lined up and little old me, I had a motorhome, you know, I was probably the least home. But Dean Martin was a favorite of mine.
Aww.
I grew up watching him. Mm-hmm. It's an old, like, I had a crush, but he was charismatic and, you know, and so we were at a wrap party where they took a picture of all of us and my arm is over him and we're all together, you know, Farrah, Jackie Chan, all that. And he turned to me and said, you wouldn't want to date somebody like me, would you? Because I'm thinking, no, I already dated someone that was 28 years older. But it was so sweet.
Yeah.
I loved him. And Terry Bradshaw, another little tidbit, what a great guy. You know, we all probably say that. You just know that he's funny, friendly. But we had chatted, because you're all stuffed together in this motel in Georgia. And we chatted for a while, you know, going back to my room. I don't know if we were going to chat some more, but he started to take his boots off. Mm. And I went, what? You got to go. Who knows? Maybe he was getting comfortable, but I'll just always remember that, you know. And then we talked years later when he was commentating on football.
Yep.
You know, and he would call at a commercial time. And I'm going, get back on. Yeah, that one I remember. He was wonderful meeting.
Mm-hmm. Any other memories from Cannonball Run? I mean, that's a huge cast. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, sometimes people want to know the goods. You don't talk about it, but on this, it was just that Farrah was so rude because, you know, she had her hair. You know, it's famous for that hair.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have that hair, but it still swung back. And
yeah.
She's in, I don't know, there's no place to go. We're in the bar restaurant, all of us. And she walks past me and goes, oh, I used to do my hair like that. Okay, that's all you have to say? So, yeah. And I'll tell you another one. Because, okay. Yeah, those were the most, because there were a lot of people. And even though it's just, like, sometimes, you know, yeah, I haven't spent 4 hours with them. But mm-hmm. Valerie Perrine, who I admire, mm-hmm. and did one of the best, besides the cops came in.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember part of the scene, but we think we're getting stopped by a male cop, but Adrian... Mm-hmm. Valerie Perrine comes in, and there was a battle with Adrian and Valerie with the boobs. Mm-hmm. And I remember when Valerie came into the set, makeup room. Mind you, you know, I was in my early 20s, mm-hmm. you know, so I didn't have all this being around. She says, "Who do I have to fuck to get a cup of coffee?" I will always remember that. That is so cool. I couldn't say that. You know, it was just like, yeah, I thought it was neat.
Yeah. She has a good documentary. I don't know if you've seen it. That's the last couple of years. It's a slightly tragic, unfortunately, because, you know, of how her life has gone. But, you know, really well done. If I forgot the name of it. But
I would love to see that. I guess I'll have to look it up if it's streaming, one of those things. But if I look up, I'd love to see that.
It's on Prime, Amazon Prime, but don't quote me on that. I'd have to look it up, but it's very good.
So. She was a wonderful actress. And then, you know, you come in for those cameo parts and take money.
Yep, yep. Miss Tessmacher! Oh, that's Superman. But anyway. Excuse me. Now, after Cannonball Run, you took a job for... I thought it was longer, but you were on Days of Our Lives. But it says here you were only on it a year. Is that correct? Yeah. It seemed like you were on longer, but, you know...
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I even interviewed, but they called me in. Now, I had tried to dye my hair dark and do some serious roles. So I wouldn't be this, you know, blonde thing. And I think I had darker hair then. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like the three camera work. It just was so impersonal. Plus, it was so fast. And I was working with my partner was, I think her name was Hope in the show, Christian mm-hmm. Alfonso. Mm-hmm. And it was just talk, say these lines. And so we were in training together, I think for police camp or something. And I was the tough one and, you know, made fun of her, but somehow we worked together. Yeah. You know, the sometimes when they have new characters, they will keep them on and add them, you know, mm-hmm. for the rest of the shows. But the producer called me in and said, you know, we're gonna take this guy because we know you don't want to do three camera. Well, I didn't say anything. Not three camera, but you just, maybe you're bigger. I don't know. But I probably would have said, I don't know what I would have said. I would have said, yeah, you know, I need the work. But yeah, I forgot about that. But I did do that. And they killed me. Yes.
They killed you. Okay. I never knew that. Okay.
You get off the show. They kill you. Right?
Wow. Didn't even think about that. But anyway. Now, you continue doing just various roles. I mean, I can mention them, Highway to Heaven, TJ Hooker, Freddy's Nightmares, blah, blah, blah. Then this is kind of odd for me.
Okay, we have to go down there. Yeah, go ahead.
What? I'm mentioning your classic Silent Night, Deadly Night.
That's a hit.
But the weird thing about that, and I didn't know this because I've actually only seen the first one, is that you're in the second and third one because they use stock footage. How did that happen? I don't know. You know, and did you get any residuals from that, or they just took your footage and just used it again?
Well, it was the first time I did a non-union. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I was allowed to do that, or either I just kind of did it.
Oops.
And it was, I think, in Park City, Utah, or it was somewhere where I got to ski. And it was also, I'll tell you the good part, but I would never have, it was the first time I showed my breast. Mm-hmm. And then it was not necessary in that scene. Okay. But
that happened a lot in those days in movies, which I didn't mind, but hey, yeah, okay.
So I would never talk about that movie. But what I've learned through other people, and also when at the table, my signing agent put that movie out there, and I went, oh, God. They would come up and buy it. And what I was told, what I learned about myself is that that movie was, I was on a poster, me screaming, and that movie was banned after 3 days.
I didn't know that.
Now it became a cult film.
Yeah.
And it had the second film. I never knew that. Yeah. I never had a third film. I didn't know that. And then at one of the conventions, they had vendors selling films and stuff. There's a poster of me. And I'm going, I don't have that poster. How much is it? They're not going to sell it to me, but I'm on the poster. There's trading cards, apparently. There's games that people would bring up fine. So right now I have absolutely, I have, because I know there's some people into this kind of cult stuff and all that. And if they came up, I'm learning, but they tell me things. They told me all of this stuff. I'm going, wow. And it makes me feel, yes, more appreciative that I could tell them about it or they remember. But I think the whole key to it is the fact that I'm embracing this. I was the mother of that child that grew up to be Slasher because he had seen Santa Claus slit my throat. So I kind of use it that way. I go, okay, all right. I'm the mother that created all this. Yeah.
Makes me wonder what they did. Well, they've done other sequels of it and everything. Would you ever go back to something like that? Or, you know, like there's a new Exorcist film that has one of the original actresses from the original film from 50 years ago. You know, it's like.
Yeah. Well, that's so different than so. That was a dumb. That was stupid.
Yeah.
Is real.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Okay. Yeah.
That's true. That. I mean, you know, there's different, but anyway. So I don't want to dwell on, you know, your career wound down and, you know, it's like things happen in life, but,
well, I got pregnant, had my daughter. Why I really quit. And I'm never married and been in a relationship and then got out of the relationship and, got pregnant with somebody and, you know, I raised her completely by myself, you know, she didn't know her dad. So that was just something that I didn't want to be away from. Mm-hmm. And it was 38 and it was just at a time that I was so happy. I mean, it's not like I went out and get pregnant or I knew I wanted a child later. But so that's what happened there. I actually went into my agent and said, I quit. He wasn't happy about it, but
you know. Yeah. You're not alone. I mean, of course, the one comes to mind was Rick Moranis. You know, he was making film. And then I think his wife died or something like that. Oh. And he had two young daughters and he just said, I'm done. And he raised his daughters and he really hasn't returned since. I think he did one SCTV reunion for a documentary that still hasn't come out yet. But that's it, you know, in the last 20 years. So, you know.
Well, also, it was the time where I kept getting those kind of roles.
The horror movies, the cheapo slasher movies.
Horror movies, but the blonde stuff.
Yeah.
And I, like I told you, that's not what I went in for. And so here I am, 35, 36. And it was a period of time, which is very true, that men can come in so wrinkled as they age, but women didn't get the role. I mean, why didn't they let me play mothers? I went out for some of those, you know, auditions, but so that was an area that I just broke down in. However, if I had, you never look back and go, if, whatever, but if I had stayed a few more years, that's when a TV series came out called 30 something.
Oh yeah.
That was so real. They were real people talking about their life, but it was still that kind of era for me, you know, that just used you as tits and ass. That's what it was called then.
Right.
Of course, I have a terrible ass. You know, never had a good blonde and tits.
Anyway.
No, I do. Family, yeah, whatever.
Now, at this point in your career, would you go back to acting if you had an opportunity, if something came along your way, or are you just pretty much out of that?
You know, I would. It's like I feel like I would be so, I'm not comfortable around a set, you know, and lines and, well, of course, if it's a role that where you're saying something real. Than a normal person might say, yeah, I would, but I haven't been out of the, this is the first time I've been out of the woods since my daughter was born.
Okay. The
convention did Williamsburg last November and then the Maryland convention now. So I've never talked about myself and I'm talking a lot.
Well, how did this come out? Because I mean, did you do you have an agent or some person that you work with that kind of says you should be out there in the spotlight talking about your career, or did you just take it upon yourself to just do this?
No, and through the years, people have found my number, you know, or whatever, because I'm not, however they get you, and. Have been asked to do autograph shows or have been asked to do an interview or something. And truthfully, it wasn't because maybe I didn't want to, it was self-image and going, really? Who knows me? Nobody knows me. Why do you, you know, I never understood the fan concept.
Yeah.
I never appreciated that. And going to the first convention made me feel really bad that I never answered a single fan mail in my whole career. But I understand now. So when how it happened is my signing agent, Scott Ray, well, for certain things, conventions, he left a message. How he got me, I don't know. But I called back, left a voicemail going, well, I don't usually do this, but I'm game.
Fair enough.
But it happened to be in Williamsburg, which is an hour away from where I'm at currently, Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Yeah.
So I went, well, okay. But mostly the when I read the brochure and why I made my decision is I realized this is nostalgia. These are old people. If Eric Estrada and Larry Wilcox, who I work with, can do it, then I can do it. So, you know, I call people and I went, because it's not like, I don't know, the younger generation. I went, well, shoot. So that made me feel very comfortable, you know, because everybody that on these conventions are really old. We're in our late 60s, up to the 90 somethings, you know.
Right. Yeah,
I enjoyed it immensely.
It's kind of funny. I just assumed you were like everybody else, just did all these years and everything, because you know you go to autograph shows in Hollywood, they get everybody out of the woodwork, and they have like that show, you may have heard it, up in
the Hollywood Burbank show.
Yeah, that one. But I mean, the other one I was thinking on the East Coast, it's in New Jersey every year, the Chiller Convention. Yeah,
I think I'm doing that.
Yeah. So like it seems like everybody does that. And so I've interviewed, well, Charles has had me interview people like Melanie, the singer, did Brand New Key. She did the show with me about a year ago. That was her first Chiller. She had never done anything. She's just like you. It's like, did anybody even remember me?
Well, I also there are some people out there that go from show to show to show. Right. Yeah. You see them all the time. And I'm thinking, well, right now I can be on a run, you know, ooh, go to that one or this one, because it's not like bringing in the money. It's just simply that it's rewarding.
Yeah.
And you can't do that. I mean, you're overexposed.
Right.
You know, I mean, like this nostalgia one apparently is, a lot of people like this one better than others because it's not, okay, bring in the next, sign that, go down that, bring in the next person. You get to actually talk to the fans.
Yeah.
You know, so it's more. But yeah, I've heard Chiller, and I it's kind of like One Silent Night, Deadly Night out, or looking at this bizarre career I had, I go, oh yeah, you would fit into Chiller, you know, so I can't fit into Star Trek or, you know, these Comic Cons, you know.
Right.
I never even heard about all this stuff, but it's I love it. I like it.
That's good. Because I have to say this one, I did one autograph show as a participant, not in signing. No, and they had a Laverne and Shirley reunion. This is about a decade ago, and Penny Marshall just wasn't into it at all. Oh. She was just like, "I don't get this," you know. And of course, she's since passed. Well, most of that cast has passed away, but you know, she just was not into it. And that apparently was her only signing. And I managed to get her autograph. And I was just doing it. She asked me, "It's like, why do you do this?" And I go, "Well, I remember the show and I liked it." You know, I'm not one of these hardcore fanboys that are like obsessive. I just, you know, I have my memories, and you know, it's like, hey, you know, so. Same thing with you, you know, it's like, oh, I remember her. She was in Cannonball Run. She was in Buck Rogers. Hey, she was pretty. I liked her.
Yeah, you see, that's where
you're still pretty. I shouldn't say that, but she was.
Thank you. Appreciate it. No plastic surgery. I mean, sometimes I see these people, these actresses, and it's like,
ah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But anyway, that's why I think I don't understand somebody like Penny Marshall or whatever would, well, you know, she had a kind of privileged life with her, you know,
yeah,
dad and husband, but would appreciate that, you know, because I appreciated what they went to, you know, to do, you know, yeah. The fans come in with a toy Lamborghini. They'd already gotten Adrian Barbeau's signature from some other time and have me sign it on the other passenger door.
Right.
Or that 55-mile speed limit sign brought in an exact replica. Remember, I think I already told you this, you know, and had me sign that. And
yeah.
Exactly. Like, and it's just like, wow, you know, you actually touched somebody. So I don't know how you would... you know, not appreciate it.
Yeah. I guess, like you said, she didn't have to. I mean, she was a film director. She had, you know, she came from, you know, Gary Marshall was her brother. So she had, you know, money in the family. There's no real reason to be doing it. And in fact, I think Gary Marshall probably kind of convinced her to do it because he was there too, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. She just wasn't having it. He was having a ball. He was loving it, you know, and he was great, you know, but you know, you know, I don't think everybody should bend over backwards to their fans 100%, but you know, it's like, you know, it's like, you know, people do appreciate what people have done, you know, and it's like, it's just, you know, a small bit of happiness, you know, that you saw when you're a kid or when you're a teenager or whatever, you know, and it's like, you know.
Yeah, that's why I just never talked about it because, for one thing, around actors, you can talk about yourself and what you've done because they'll get it.
Right.
But like, you're not normal. You're doing a lot of actors. You know, it's like somebody, I remember you, Cannonball Run, but they don't know your history or anything. Yeah. And they'll ask you, well, how did you like working with Bert and stuff like that? And I'm thinking, but you don't know me. I mean, that's me. I can't just talk about that surface stuff. I mean, this is business, what we're doing. I mean, right. It really is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we're both helping each other and what we need to do. But that's not my normal conversation. So when it gets, when they ask those kind of questions, I just don't, you're not talking about me, the real me. Yeah. I'd rather talk about my feelings, my life,
I mean, the way I handle these shows, podcasts, this is for fun, but you know, it's like, you know, I get to meet different people and talk to them and stuff like that. My podcast is really targeted to people who are passionate about something, So in your case, you're passionate about acting, you know, and, you know, it's like, so I want to hear about that. You know, it's like, I didn't really have that same passion and drive for acting. I had the same passion and drive for writing books and other things. So I get it for that, you know, but it's like, you know, and I, you know, I told people this before, is like, I use the King, the Master, Johnny Carson as my role model on doing these podcasts, you know, so I want to find out about you. I don't need to know your intimate secrets, but, you know, at the same time, you know, I want to know a little bit and I want to have a little fun here, you know, and so that's
what we try to but, do. You know, the same realm is, you know, banker, lawyer, banker, Indian chief. Yeah, you know, I played that game when young. And, but you're still an artist, you know? And, you know, unfortunately, you know, a writer can write, you know, a songwriter can sing, but an actor can't act. But when I'm around artists, and you are, you know, in that field, it's not acting, but that's when I'm comfortable, because you know it, you know, and also you knew you needed to be in some part of it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I admire that.
One thing I like about you is that you did realize it. Another person that came to realize it later in life was Michael Nesmith of the Monkees. For years, he was just like, that Monkees stuff, you know, what is it? I don't get it. And then it was probably the last decade of his life, it just kind of started clicking. And he goes, you know, I gave these people happiness by writing songs, acting in this TV show, acting silly, you know, whatever, you know, it made people happy. It gave people a good feeling. So, you know, it's like, and he finally realized that.
Because I grew up with the Monkees. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and that made me feel good that he finally got it, because I remember when he was younger, like in his 40s and stuff, 30s and 40s, he was like, this Monkees stuff. You know, it's like, I watched it, you know, I saw it, you know? But you know, it was like, and so he wouldn't go on the tours and everything like that. But then later, he got it. So,
well, that's why I even kind of prefaced it and pointed out, you know, that was the 80s. That's not what I went out for. But so then therefore, you know, there's, there was really nothing I ever wanted to talk about, because except for maybe the few lines I had in Quincy with the botched abortion, you know, because that's real. But yeah, I have come to, somebody said, so I'm talking two podcasts, I'm talking to the fans all within this year, two times. And somebody said, a new friend I made at the convention, well, you sure talk a lot, and or something, or you talk more than me. And I go, I do not. You talk about yourself. Well, I am lately, but I don't. You know, I'm the one who kind of listens, or I'm the therapist, or whatever. Mostly because I don't like real boring conversation. I'd rather just stay home by myself. You know, I like Harrison Ford, and I'm gonna pull it up again. Said, because I told this guy today, what? Okay, Tara, pull it up, quick. Okay, there I am. And this I identify with completely. That's the right phrase. Okay, here it is. He said, I don't have a social anxiety disorder. I have an abhorrence of boring situations. So that really hit the nail with me. You know, if I can't have a decent conversation with you about something on a perhaps different level.
Yeah.
But, you know, we are talking about the biz, then the biz. I think we hear each other, don't we?
Yeah.
We get each other.
You're doing your Paul Lynde invitation. We get each other, don't you?
You're right. Oh, you should interview this guy named Michael Arrington. He does the Paul Lynde show. My God, you've got to look him up. He was a friend they went to school with. He has made it now. He is Paul Lynde. He's doing a show here. He did a nightclub show. He also does this. I'm promoting him, but his name is Michael Arrington, A-I-R. Michael! A-I-R-I-N-G-T-O-N. Oh, my God! Hysterical. So he was really he is Paul Lynde. And he was also, what's her name? The girl with Goldie Hawn. She did this latest series with Jane Fonda and somebody else.
Lily Tomlin. She was
Lily Tomlin.
Oh, it is. Okay.
So in any case, I threw that out there, but it's very only cool. Because it was Paul Lynde. Yeah.
Very cool. Okay. All right. Well, let's see. What do you expect? I guess this is, no, I won't ask that. I was going to say, I can ask this, I guess. I'll ask it.
We'll give it a try. Yes.
All right. What do you expect to happen at the Salem, Massachusetts Paranormal and Horror Paracon? That's what my question was, because it's like, I expect to sign and see people,
But Charles Rose Nay came up to the table and mentioned doing it, but he also did it with the guy that was my signing agent for this one. But mm-hmm. Charles was so respectful. And then, talking to Scott, his name, I thought that's very nice. Plus Charles just looks like this little producer. He's got so much going on. He was interested. I knew a friend that produced Monkeys television, anyway, was acquainted with it, did a TV movie a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But Charles was just wonderful. And I trusted him. I could believe in him. I think that man might be a man of his word. But on top of that, it is because I have wanted a psychic reading for so long. And these mentalists and psychic is going to be there. Paranormal.
Right.
I like that stuff, So maybe I can get a vibe of all this, or somebody will read me and get something and tell me what my life's going to be in the future. But also I am one of the people that is brought outside the norm. Mm-hmm. So, people could come in. And I guess that Silent Night would work for him, but I haven't been overexposed, So I just think it'll be fun, I think it'll be different than mm-hmm. this nostalgia, mm-hmm. but I like him, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
I'll tell you my background with Charles. I'm a big Beatles fan, and I've been a fan since the 70s, but I subscribed to Charles's, I don't know if you knew this, he had a fanzine called Good Day Sunshine, and he published it for about almost 2 decades, long before he did these shows and other stuff. Well, I guess he was doing shows then too. I knew of him, but I never met him until about 2 or 3 years ago, and we instantly hit it off, and he goes, mm-hmm. Your show's great. You're wonderful. And he's like, I'll get you guests on your show and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, and I always wanted to go on his Liverpool trip that he does every year. I don't know if you're aware of that. He does this Liverpool trip. I've been wanting to do it for 40 years. He started in 1983. And finally, I almost did it this last year and chickened out. But now I'm definitely doing it. I am finally doing it.
And what do you mean you chickened out on what? Going there or what?
The reason I chickened in early days, I chickened out just because of, what we said earlier in the podcast is that, I'm not big on travel and, whatever. I can't say I've never traveled, but, it's like, it takes a lot to get me to move somewhere and stuff like that. So, you know, and my dad's the traveler.
Oh, you were you were going to visit.
Yeah. Yeah. But even then, that's it's a big haul for me emotionally. Yeah. Anyway, but also financially and everything else like that, you know. And it's like if he says, oh, Mark, you know, come on the trip, all expenses paid. I'd be there now, you know, when you get a bill that you pay in advance and you look at it and you go, can I afford this?
you know, but
I'm determined to do it. And so, you know, I am doing it. And I, you know, it's like the first thing I said, if I could put it all on credit card, could I do it? And I said, I could do that. I'm not going to, but I'm just saying if I could pay it on credit just to get it done, you know, it's like, I have enough money to do that. So I go, okay, if I can do that, I can save money and not have the credit card.
But just, Mark, see, this is something that you have been passionate about.
Yeah.
And this is something that you've been interested in forever. And also, you know, when people say bucket list, I mean, a hole in that bucket list.
Well, I never even thought it was on my bucket list. It was always kind of in the back of my mind. And then, you know, once we became friends, it suddenly became up in the forefront. I go, you know, I want to do this. And if I'm going to go with anybody, and it's the trust issue like you're talking about, I'd like to go with somebody who's experienced, who's done this many, many years in a row and knows what he's talking about. And so, you know, that's why I'm doing
well. What is it? I mean, I'm now promoting Liverpool, but
yeah, well, still Charles things. It's a trip in August of 2024. Well, he does it every August to go to Liverpool and London during Beetle Week. There's Beetle Week, you know, and you visit all the sites like the cavern. I don't know everything off the top of my head. I think you go on the Magical Mystery Tour bus or a facsimile or something. You go to the, I know this last year they went to the Abbey Road Studios. He said, can't always get into that because, you know, if there's somebody booked in there that's actually recording an album, you can't just have tourists walking through, you know? So he lucked out and got it this last time, but he says, I can't guarantee it for next year. And I go, well, you know, it's like, I'm happy just to be doing it. So that's where I'm, you know.
Well, I hope you do it.
Yes. Well,
I do.
I'm committed to doing it, which.
Oh, that's nice.
So
I think that like Salem, I don't know, you know, if I can take another day or to go to, there's a lot of museums there. Because that subject matter just interests me. It's been, you know, decades since I read a book on that kind of sad stuff. But yeah, same theory, you know, you want to see the elements around it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been over there, but that was all 2009 or something was when it was old 2008 or think somewhere around that time I was in Massachusetts. But you know, I'd love to go back. So I have done some traveling, just not outside the country. That's really what, but you know
I don't know where I'm gonna live. I've just had that thing of building it up, losing it all. And a lot of that was with my daughter. She's born and raised in LA, and then I tried to come back here. She was 5 years old. There's a ton of family here. And she didn't know grandma and, you know, all the thousand cousins. So I brought her back here and I couldn't hack it. And I play so long. So again.
Is she an adult now? She's
28.
Okay. So you're free to move if you wish.
She's certainly got her radical own mind. I admire her.
Hey, come back out to the West Coast. Come in my neck of the woods.
Well, I would
hang out together. My wife and you. Yeah, it's not hot.
Not where you are.
You know, I don't mean California. I mean up here, Oregon or Washington. Yeah.
Now that, believe it or not, I have my mind on Seattle.
Yeah.
I got brother there. That's it. Have I been to Seattle? No. But I did work in Vancouver with Jan Michael Vincent for
Washington's cool. I mean, you know, if you don't mind snow part of the year and, you know, it rains a lot, but, you know.
Well, I like the rain. My daughter's name is Haley Rain. Okay. Yeah. Haley Rain. And yeah, I do. I don't get dismal. I just love it, you know. So I don't know where I'm going to go. And
Ask that psychic when you go to the Paracon. There you go. Hey, where does the future hold for where I'm living? You know.
Thank you for, yeah.
Anyway, I've kept you up for at least an hour. I said it would be between 60 to 90 minutes. So, you know, it's
68,
like
68 to 90 minutes.
No, I said 60 to 90 minutes. Do you have any last thoughts, or did you want to plug your appearance, or say anything else?
Well, I will. I'll read that like you did. It's very important. I mean, and I pulled it up on my camera. So it is the event I'll be at is in Salem, Massachusetts, on the 11th and 12th of November. It is called the Salem Paracon. And the website is www.salem, salempara.org. And the telephone number, it's on the website, 203, I've never promoted anything before.
You're doing
203-795-4737. And I'll be there. And so will Charles Rosenay.
Who's he? Who's he? No, he's going to be there promoting his books. I'm sure he'll show you if he hasn't. He does the top 10 book of horror list, the top 10 book of Beatles songs, and his own book about horror spots and psychic spots and paranormal spots in Connecticut. So,
but yeah. I asked him, I said, well, do you believe in all this, Charles, the psychics and stuff? And he went, no, not really. But he told me that when he's taking a picture with one of those people, there's always some kind of aura or orb or something. I said, well, how can you not? He says, well, I just let it go. I mean, huh? You know, so.
To each his or her own there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, I just want to say that this has been fun getting back to... instead of me hibernating and never talking to anybody. And, you know, I have, you know, that thing they say, you have your five great friends on your hand, five, you know, and of course there's others, but those are solid to me. Mm-hmm. And it's just nice to be able to talk about my career and people that know it without bragging, without being important, you know, and all that. So it's been a pleasure doing these. I hope to do a couple more shows, and you know, then you'll get sick of me and everything. But thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you. And you're a great guest. I will tell you when this uploads, because I did this on purpose. It'll be a couple weeks before November 11th and 12th. This is the Halloween episode. So this will upload on October 31st, 2023. And
you know what I should have done? I should have had a gash here for Silent Deadly Night, because that might be the thing up there about promoting it, even though I did have cervical surgery a while ago. So I got a little one. Yeah, I gotcha that you let me know and you'll promote it.
Yes. And it was very great talking to you. You're a great guest. And I guess that wraps it up. If you have any other things to say, or you know, one last plug, or we will just call it an evening and go on.
Yeah, I think we'll call it, only because somebody said I talk too much.
No, you're great. Yeah. All right. I think
maybe we'll, you know, someday if I'm on the West again.
Thank you. And I would enjoy meeting you very much. Me too. So anyway, that wraps it up for this episode of Fun Ideas Podcast. This is Mark Arnold, and with my special guest, the actress Tara Buckman. I'll never get it right. Anyway, all right. And I thank you very much. Have a happy Halloween, and we will see you soon. Go see this lady at the Salem, Massachusetts Paranormal and Horror Paracon on November 11th and 12th.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and have a great night.
Bye. Bye, Mark.
Thank you for listening, and thank you, Tara Buckman, for being my special guest. Remember, you can always watch the video version of this episode on YouTube. Episode number 236 will be coming soon.
Bye.
Thank you for listening, and thank you, Doug Wolfberg, for being my special guest. Remember, you can always watch the video version of this episode on YouTube. Episode number 229 will be coming soon. If you would like to comment and or be a guest on this podcast, please drop me a line at funideas.mark@gmail.com. Become a patron of Mark Arnold and Fun Ideas Productions. If everyone listening just contributed $1 a month, that would be a tremendous help in continuing the production of my books and this podcast. Also, subscribe to my YouTube channel. The opening and closing music for the Fun Ideas podcast is provided courtesy of Andrew the Slow Poisoner Goldfarb and is used with permission. This has been the Fun Ideas podcast. This is Mark Arnold speaking. This episode is copyright 2022. Fun Ideas Productions. Thank you and good night.